So do you ever get bored? Maybe this time every Sunday around this moment, ever get a little bored? Why do we get bored? Well, you can make an appointment with Dr. Google and you can find a whole lot of reasons why we get bored. So of all the lists that are out there, I just picked one. And one of the reasons that we get bored is the rush to the need for novelty. Yeah, novelty. Novelty, by definition, means something that is new, something unusual, something unfamiliar. And we are in the time of year where there is nothing but novelty. Novelty everywhere. That's why every single store gets turned upside down, right? I went into a store a week or two ago. They had removed the entire men's department. There was no men's department. It was gone, and it was replaced with rows and rows of Christmas thingamajigs. I mean, just everywhere you could imagine. Poor guy goes in there hoping to get a V-neck mock turtleneck, and he can't even find any clothes. Now, I really want you to think about a V-neck mock turtleneck, because that's a fun thought. Just imagine what that would look like. Yeah. Why do we need novelty? Why is there such a smorgasbord of novelty out there today? Well, part of the reason that we love novelty is because we as human beings are obsessed with things that are new, things that are unfamiliar. Now, we might be tempted to say, no, not me. I don't like new things. I like everything to stay just the way it is. Now, most of us think that way. It doesn't always play out that way in real life, though, right? I mean, my father would have been someone who really would say, I don't want anything to change. I don't want anything new. I'm good. But when he retired, he also went to Sam's at least once a week. And he walked slowly through that aisle, hoping that there might be a good deal on a new snack or a new flashlight or a new Clemson t-shirt. In other words, all of us from the garden until now, we all have a desire every now and then for something of novelty. We do. We want something new. Either we want something new just to enjoy it, or we just need something new just to pass the time. We all are tempted from time to time to have that need for novelty. But how can we avoid the temptation? On the holidays and all the other days, how can we avoid what's often driven by boredom and run away from the rush of novelty? We continue our series, Christmas Rush, where we're looking at one particular moment in history, and it is this one particular moment in history that can help our minds break out of the needless novelty. Or maybe put another way, it is this one unique moment in history that can actually over and over and over again help us, cure us, so to speak, in the moment of boredom. And what is that? Well, let's see if we can find out. Today's message is Let's Go Wonder, and we're going to be looking in the Bible, in the Gospel of Luke. And we begin in chapter 2, verse 17, and this is what Dr. Luke writes. When they had seen him, they made known the statement which had been told them about this child. The first announcement of the grand and glorious message and news of Christmas was given to some shepherds, some uneducated, scraggly, probably smelly social outcasts that were just somewhere in a field near Bethlehem. They were the first ones to see Jesus. They were the first ones to hear about Jesus. And how did they respond to the news? How did they respond to what they saw? Well, before we answer that question, let's maybe offer this question. How do you think you would have responded? How would we have responded to what the shepherds experienced? Imagine that you're taking a day trip somewhere in the state, some cute little small town that you've never been to, and you're just going to go there for the day. Or maybe imagine that you're on a weekend getaway at a cabin in the mountains or a bungalow at the beach. Or maybe you're on the trip of a lifetime, some grand city on the other side of the globe. Now, what happens when people are around places like that after maybe 2 or 3 hours? Every now and then, sometimes people will say what? Man, I think I could live here. Right? I mean, we've all done it, you know? Or maybe it's not a place. Maybe you hear about a great chili dog place in town, right? And you go over and you're trying the chili dogs. And man, when you get to about your seventh chili dog, when you get through your seventh chili dog, you say, you know what? Gosh, I think I could eat these for the rest of my life, right? I mean, we know that feeling, this experience that we have in life. And it's such a wonderful experience that we find ourselves going, man, I wish this moment would just stay forever. I wish this wouldn't change. Now look, I know these might have been some smelly, scraggly, outcast shepherds, but they were still human beings like me and like you. So I'm imagining they had some of the same kinds of thoughts, right? I'm imagining one of them turned to the other one and said, man, just look at this. I'm not going back to shepherding. Man, I'm done. Let's just stay here with Jesus. This is great. Let's just do this. Look, why don't we ask Mary and Joseph if we can build a shepherd suite at their house and we just stay with them all the time? But that's not what happened. What happens and what we see recorded in history is that they saw Jesus and they were overwhelmed with the moment. And they were so overwhelmed with the moment that they thought immediately, we have got to tell somebody about what we've heard and what we've seen. In the middle of the deepest dark of night, the sky where they were standing suddenly lit up with a blinding light. And these shepherds, these no-name shepherds, suddenly find themselves hearing and seeing an angel from heaven. And what do the angels say? Luke 2, verse 10. Do not be afraid, for behold, I bring you good news of great joy, which will be for all the people. For today, in the city of David, there has been born for you a Savior who is Christ the Lord. Now, the message from the angel did not command them to go and find the baby in the manger, but they did. They were here in the most terrifying experience that they'd ever had, and their response was to look at one another and say, let's go. Let's go and find this baby. And now they've found the baby, and the same thing is happening again. The angel did not say, hey, this good news is for all people, and you're the ones that are supposed to go give the good news to all people. But they did. They found themselves in the same moment. They went from the most terrifying moment they had ever experienced to the most terrific moment they had ever experienced. But they're saying the same thing. They're looking at one another and they're saying, let's go. Let's go and make sure that we tell people about what we've seen and what we've heard. Now again, just to be clear, they did not take an online witnessing training class before they left the manger, okay? They didn't look around at one another and say, man, I'm pretty sure this event is the central, most important event in the history of the world. So maybe we should go find the pastor or church staff or maybe that good Bible study teacher so that they can go tell people about what happened. No, they themselves said, look at what we've seen. Look at what we've heard. We must tell someone about this Jesus. And that's usually how it goes for new Christians, right? New Christians get really excited about what they've experienced. There's this joy, this excitement in their salvation. Now, this isn't tickets for a guilt trip. It's just a simple question. How is your joy and excitement? How's your joy and excitement? Are you eager with joy about the truth of Jesus? Or are you eager to think about the truth of Jesus and also to talk about the truth of Jesus? Or is that just something that pastors and church staff and evangelists and missionaries and Bible study teachers do? Someone once said that you can say that you're a Christian, you can say that you go to church, you can say Merry Christmas instead of Happy Holidays, but at the end of the day, what matters the most is, do you have joy? Is there much joy in your life? And are you eager to think about and speak about that joy? How much joy do you have? What's in your joy tank, for lack of a better word? We aren't talking about how much joy you have in this room on a Sunday morning. We aren't just talking about the joy that you might have in December or the joy that you might have on Christmas Day or on Thanksgiving Day or on Easter Sunday or your birthday or some other special day. We're talking about where's your joy when you are terrified in the dark of night? Where's your joy when it feels like everything is starting to fall apart? Where's your joy when it seems like all the news seems bad? City of West Columbia sponsors an essay contest for elementary students every year. It's called What Christmas Means to Me. And this year's winner was Taylan. He's a fifth grader here in the community, and he's one of the most impressive and remarkable fifth graders I've ever met. On Friday night, he shared his essay, read it at the city hall, and I was holding the microphone for him while he was reading. And he began his essay by saying that this Christmas was going to be different than any other Christmas he had ever had because his father had recently been incarcerated. And he talked about how hard it was going to be. And then almost immediately in his essay, he kept reading and he shifted. He shifted to say, yes, this is hard, but he shifted and started firmly focusing on the joy of Jesus and the joy of his family and the joy of the things that he already knows he's going to experience in the weeks and the years ahead. Taylan has joy in the midst of difficulty. And I stood there convicted and humbled at his kindness and the joy that he had, thinking, boy, I need more of that kind of joy. Where's your joy? How much joy do you have? Look, we're not going to start a tally board on the side of the sanctuary and put every church member's name on there. And every week we're going to come in and put check marks by your name if you go and tell somebody about Jesus. We're not doing that. But maybe just the simple weight of this question might be helpful. If you profess to be a Christian, is the joy of your salvation seen and heard in your life? None of us are perfect, but I mean, just look back over the last week. How much joy in salvation has been there? I mean, we're all going to have moments. We're all going to struggle. But is there joy in your salvation? And can it be seen? Can it be heard? Can people in your family, people at church, people at work, people in traffic, do they have any knowledge, any awareness that you have joy in Christ? The shepherds heard the good message of Christmas. They saw the God-man of Christmas. And immediately they had joy. They were overwhelmed with joy. And they said, let's go. Let's go and be sure that we don't keep this story to ourselves. Let's go and share. Shortly after Jesus was crucified and resurrected and ascended into heaven, Peter and John were arrested for doing exactly what the shepherds were going to do. They were arrested for telling people about Jesus. And as they stood in front of the authorities, this is what they said, Acts 4:20, "For we cannot stop speaking about what we have seen and heard." The wonderful, joy-filled story of Jesus, just, it was spilling out of their mouth. There's no way they were going to be able to stop. And that's exactly what happened with the shepherds. How about with us? How is it with us? Look, none of us are perfect. We're not, okay? And we're going to have moments. We're going to have days. We're going to have weeks. We're going to have months, maybe, where we struggle. We're not always going to be prancing around singing Have a Holly Jolly Christmas. But how much does the joy of our salvation come up in our attitude and our responses? In the dark times, do we have that joy to hang on, to bring some light? In the light times, when everything's good, do we stop and acknowledge the joy of our salvation, not just in December, but all year long? What happened as the shepherds told the people? Verse 18, "And all who heard it wondered at the things which were told them by the shepherds." The story of the shepherds is amazing. And the story that they told is super amazing. The story they told should create a sense of wonder, a sense of awe in our hearts and our minds. What if I were to tell you today that tomorrow morning it will be announced that I am going to be the next head football coach at the University of North Carolina? Yeah. I mean, it doesn't sound likely at all, but technically it's not completely impossible, right? But here's what it's not. It's not a miracle. It's not amazing. God being born in a manger, that is a miracle, and that is amazing. Have we lost the miraculous wonder of the manger? Or maybe you may say you've never had any miraculous wonder in the manger. We would love for you to find it today. Have we lost the miracle, lost the amazing wonder of this story? Is the reality that Jesus was born to save just something that's not creating awe in our life anymore? If so, what's the best way to get that wonder back? What's the best way to get the wonder of the manger and keep the wonder of the manger? Well, one thing we might be able to do is quit being such adults. Yeah. One day Jesus was teaching and he said this in Matthew 18:3, "Truly I say to you, unless you change and become like children, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven." There is a danger if all we're doing is saying, "I remember praying the sinner's prayer. I remember shaking the preacher's hand. I remember getting baptized." If that is the only source of confidence in your salvation, that is a very dangerous confidence. Because the confidence of the joy of our salvation is that there has been a change. Something's different. Jesus says, unless you change and become like children, you will not enter the kingdom of God. Unless your faith is consistently childlike, then you will not be able to enjoy the great and grand and glorious, miraculous truth of the manger. What needs to change in your life this Christmas? What change is necessary? My cousin's son Samuel, he's in high school now, but one year when he was maybe 2 or 3 years old, the whole month of November and December, he casually walked around their house over and over and over again, just singing happy birthday. I mean, over and over and over. It wasn't his birthday, but he knew whose birthday it was. He had a pretty good grasp on Christmas. How's your grasp on Christmas? How's your joy in Christmas? Christmas is about Jesus. In fact, life is about Jesus. In 18 days, Christmas will be over. I know. Bah humbug, Ebba Dowser Scrooge. I got it. I know. But it's true, right? Christmas will be over. The tree will come down. The presents, the unique presents will be exchanged. The ornaments will be put away. And it will be over. The question will be, will we have gazed at the wonder of Jesus? Or will we have just had a Merry Christmas? See, you can have a Merry Christmas and not gaze at the wonder of Jesus. It's completely possible for you to have a Merry Christmas without Jesus. You can do all of the Christmas things, all of the Christmas traditions. You can read the Christmas story with your family from the Bible and still miss the wonder of what it means to be saved, rescued, and redeemed by the baby that was born in the manger. Miss that Jesus Christ was born to save. Next Sunday, we're going to be singing the rich Christmas song, O Come, Emmanuel. Stacy and Emily just played an arrangement of that a few moments ago. And there's one line that we'll sing next week that goes like this: disperse the gloomy clouds of night and death's dark shadows put to flight. When you breathe your last breath, when you are there in the dark shadows of death, when those shadows are calling upon you, will you know in that moment, will you have the joy of believing and knowing with confidence that those dark shadows will flee? They will be put to flight. Do you have that joy? Jesus Christ was born to save, born to rescue, to redeem, so that we could know that those dark shadows will flee. Dear Christian, in Christ, the dark shadows of death must flee. They will flee. And that's at least one reason why we should gaze in wonder at the baby in the manger. Paul Tripp said this: the Advent season tells a story that will take your breath away. It's a story about inescapable need, a glorious incarnation, a substitutionary life, an atoning sacrifice, and a victorious resurrection, all in the Christmas story. He goes on, only God could write such a story, and only God could complete the plot. It's a story meant to amaze us, humble us, capture us, rescue us, and transform us, and calls us to live in wonder and worship. This story provides the only way you can make sense out of your identity and your true need. That sounds crazy, right? A baby in a manger is the only way for me to sort out my identity and my true need? Yeah. Dig deep into the reality of the story of Christmas, and you will find true need and you will find true identity in this baby. He goes on to say this: this story reveals where hope is to be found and points you to the meaning and purpose of your existence. It's not just a holly jolly Christmas. This story of Jesus points us to the meaning and purpose of our existence. That makes Christmas much more important than just December 25th. This story of Jesus should be something that we gaze and wonder and awe at every single day. Last week, we have so many cool kids here in our church. And last week, one of them, Nora Duncan, came up to me afterwards and she said, "Hey, if the shepherds were such smelly, scraggly outcasts and nobody liked them, then why did people listen to their message?" That's a good question, isn't it? And I was stumped. We were standing right here, and I was like, "Nora, that's a really good question." And I just kind of sat there for a minute and thought, "Okay, God, I need an answer pretty fast because I don't have one right now." And I told her, I said, "You know, Nora, I guess the first thing that comes to mind is just that that's what makes the story of Jesus so amazing, what God can do through the power of this baby. He can even cause random people to listen to random shepherds share good news of great joy." I'll add this week that I think what also helped is I'm pretty sure those shepherds, they had some joy. I think they were in awe of what they had experienced. I think there was this sense of wonder in their attitude, in their facial expressions, in their words. And I think that joy and that wonder was contagious. How contagious is our joy? Are people catching joy from us? Or is the Christmas story so familiar that we've almost lost our wonder? More than 124 years ago, J.C. Ryle said this: "Familiarity with sacred things has an awful tendency to make men despise them. That's fascinating. The story of Christmas is a sacred story, but so much so that it becomes familiar even to the point that some people begin to despise the story. So familiar, and sometimes that familiarity can be dangerous. How? Stephen Whitmer says this: it's possible to become so familiar with Jesus that we know him as a Sunday school answer rather than a mind-blowingly great, heart-meltingly beautiful Lord who makes his claim upon our lives, to whom we owe everything, who alone gives us lasting joy, and who deserves all of our worship. Familiarity with Jesus may lead us to believe we have him figured out. Simply put, perhaps we're a little bored of him. Now, look, we would all say, oh, that's not true. But that's not true. I'm not bored with Jesus. But do some mental math. How much of this week and your time and your energy connected to Christmas was about Christmas stuff instead of the Christmas story? How many hours did we spend shopping as compared to maybe a few minutes reading the Bible, if that? See, none of us would say that we're bored with Jesus because that sounds heretical and sacrilegious. But if you look at the fibers of our life, not on purpose, but we tend to reveal that maybe we're bored with the manger. Maybe we're bored with the all because we are filling ourselves with the need of the novelty of everything else. So the beauty of these smelly, scraggly shepherds is that they were the last people on the earth that we would ever think would be the first people to hear the message of Jesus. And so maybe in just looking at their lives, we might be able to say to ourselves and maybe say to those around us, hey, let's don't be bored with Jesus. And maybe like the shepherds, we can turn to each other a little more and say, let's go. Let's go and wonder that this baby was born to save.